An evening of lively, smart conversation and jazz. Join me, John Williams, for a live taping of the Mincing Rascals podcast, Robert's Pizza, and Jazz, Wednesday, June 12th, 6 to 8 at Winter's Jazz Club in Streeterville. Tickets at WGNRadio.com/rascals.
This week, the Rascals preview the RNC, talk about Trump's new vice presidential candidate, and discuss the Illinois state legislature finally getting their paychecks.
Today is Friday. It's July 15th, 2016. I am John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals podcast, part of which you can hear broadcast on my Saturday show on WGN. I'm on from 1 to 3. Listen to part of this segment every Saturday at 1:30.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Tribune editorial board and a column writer.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City.
Appreciate you filling in for Steve Bertrand, who can't join us this week, and Eric Zorn. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing great.
That's not what you said off the air. You said
I'm personally doing great. Okay, go on.
Our first topic today is what has happened in Nice, France, as we record this. It is the day after a terrorist or some sort of murderous person drove a smaller white semi-truck into a crowd at the Bastille Day ceremonies and celebration, the fireworks show that night. And as we speak, almost 80 people have been reported killed. You said what, Scott?
I'm just, for the first time in my life, I'm not optimistic about the future of the country, of the world. It's just, we're having a terrorist attack a day in the world. Many of them aren't being reported widely because they're small and in places we don't really care about. But it is happening. And I don't know what the answer is. And maybe that's where my lack of optimism comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times you say, well, we'll just wage war on those people and that'll go away, or we'll donate, or we'll get out of the way and that'll go away. But I don't see any of those as paths to peace or safety for people right now.
No, and you know, I mean, what, we're going to declare war on all of the ice cream truck drivers? Because that's what this guy was, apparently. I mean, yeah. You know, it's
you know what the common touch is, though? I mean, if you go Orlando, you just pick them off. I think it's people that are not mentally well and have an agenda and have access to trucks or weapons. But I maybe this is the hope, because I, like Eric Zorn has long said, it's easy to attribute too much to these random killings. We have more of them now. Maybe there's a copycat phenomenon, but maybe the planet isn't as hateful as this makes it feel right now.
Oh, I don't know. Have you been listening to the political chatter?
Yeah.
I just think this is, and I don't want to, you know, this is going to be our way of life, and it has been in other parts of the world that live in a constant state of war. But you cannot stop a lone wolf who can have access to a motor vehicle and cause this much, tragedy. There's no way to stop it. The FBI can't stop it. These are not cells, terrorist cells that the CIA and different intelligence organizations could try to root out. These are lone wolves who are determined to cause, you know, great harm and tragedy. And there is nothing you can do. And I think that's the scary and frustrating.
Yeah, but following Orlando, I mean, if I can get touchy-feely here for just a moment, I know this will surprise you coming from a Republican, but recovering Republican, I'll call myself. Janine, my wife, it was Friday night or Saturday morning. She says, I'm really, really sad. This is just after the Orlando shootings. I'm sorry, the Dallas attacks. And she says, I'm just so sad. I said, you know what you do? We're going to wake up tomorrow morning, and we're going to go up to a baby shower for my niece. I said, we're going to drive, and we're going to enjoy the day. We're going to take 1 hour at a time, and we're going to look up, and we're going to say, the sky is blue. Everything's okay. We're alive right now, this moment. And we're going to take that one step at a time. And it really helped to kind of take that half step back from the cacophony of all the bad news. And like I said, I know it sounds like, you know, Stuart Smalley or something, you know, and affirmations. But it really helped to just take that half a breath and say, you know what, the world, it may not be that bad. Mm-hmm. Amen.
No, I think that's, you know, worth listening to and thinking about. And I think Kristen's right, too. That's the world we live in. I think these things come in waves, too. I seem to remember after Columbine, it seemed like either we were focused on, or more kids were, there were more shootings in schools. And I know that didn't stop before or after Sandy Hook, but it just seems to me like there was a wave of kids exacting violence in schools around that time, and then it sort of went away. And I'm just wondering if right now we're at the top of a wave and that it's not going to be this awful in the next few months. I'm hopeful that this is just the worst of it. And you're right. It's hard to get up in the morning and turn on the radio or TV or pick up the paper and, you know, sort of be afraid of what you're about to witness here.
Well, right.
Yeah. True.
Let's move on to another subject. I mean, we just can't fix that. The Republican National Convention is going to be,
sorry,
don't laugh, is going to start Monday. Again, we're recording this on Friday. And I am optimistic about it being fantastically entertaining. And I don't mean in a train wreck sort of way, although it might be that too. But I think the idea that you bring in people from sports and business, it's not just politicians that are having trouble getting politicians, that the kids are going to speak. I just think it's going to be...
Yes.
I don't know the end of that sentence. I'm kind of anxious to see what it's going to be like. Tim Tebow will not be speaking. If you want proof that there's a disconnect between the party and the convention itself and the campaign and the candidate himself, just look at Tim Tebow, who has a slot scheduled to speak. I was interested in seeing Tim Tebow speak. I wasn't shocked, a little disappointed that he was going to do so. And then he put out a YouTube video today saying, I've been busy, but I just heard I'm speaking. I'm not speaking.
Oh, my gosh. He was supposed to speak on Thursday, right before Trump gives
his
acceptance
speech.
That's huge.
I know. It's
right.
A marquee spot. Right. He said, I have not heard anything about this. I want to do good in the world, but I'm not going to do it in politics right now. So goodbye, everybody.
Wow. Wow.
Wow.
Well, we've got Mrs. Trump on Monday. She's speaking on Monday. Monday is also Benghazi night, where they're going to focus.
Really?
Yes.
Are they calling
it
that?
It does sort of have a theme. It's
very distasteful. Because one night is Bill Clinton's, you know, peccadilloes, as it were.
Right.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Don't seriously.
I mean,
a heart
that's
attack.
What we're reading. Now, again, this has been so unorganized, and we were just talking earlier about this, the Trump campaign in general. You know, the difficulty in getting delegates and having a field organization and having some sort of a on the ground presence, and the convention sort of feels that way. They just put out a list of speakers. I mean, normally you would have gotten this weeks ago. So it's subject to change.
Well, I saw the list, and I thought, okay, the guy from Google, the billionaire, and, you know, some politicians, and I thought, that's kind of interesting. I'm not sure now how many of them are actually going to be there, though. Huh.
Right.
may or may not show up.
We shall see. But his children, all four of his grown adult children, are speaking. And,
yeah.
I mean, they are really accomplished, talented people. So I'm looking forward. They really are. They are very impressive.
I mean, really, how do we know that? I mean, we know that she looks great, and the young men, I think, look ridiculous, but maybe, you know, and what have they done? What is their great accomplishment again?
You know, they were not, I don't attribute this to Donald Trump, but Ivana, you know, came from a impoverished country, and I think she tried to raise them. You know, they weren't the kids showing up to college in Lamborghinis. They'll talk a little bit about that, I think. But they did a long sit-down interview not too long ago, maybe on 60 Minutes. And it was kind of remarkable that, given all of the privilege, they certainly didn't come across that way. Let's leave it at that.
Did you see Mr. Trump's comment about how he can relate to black Americans? He was asked about sort of this disenfranchisement that exists in this country. And what does he have to say to blacks in this country? And he said, listen, I can relate and they can relate to me
because he's orange.
He's a person of color also. It's right. The worst color. It's the orange color.
Right.
He said.
The most underrepresented, by the way.
The super minority.
It's not even a box on my tax form. He said that his disenfranchisement is that the Republican Party has sort of kept him at arm's distance. He knows what it's like to be on the outside. I don't know if that's going to work, but that's how he can relate to the black.
Oh, good.
Pretty
Lord.
Sure he has zero support. I mean, I actually saw a poll.
Yeah.
Zero,
99-1. Yeah.
Yeah, zero support in the black community. So he can try that. I mean,
well, then how do you explain Christy McQuarrie, the, what is it, Quinnipiac this week? It's 42-42 or 40-40. They're even, the Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton campaigns.
Yeah.
According to one, and you know, and everybody that I tell that to, they just roll their eyes and say, oh, I don't believe that. Maybe I should talk to Republicans or some conservatives or Trump supporters. Maybe they do. Clearly, somebody is answering those questions and saying, yeah, I'm going to vote for Trump.
And it's not just Quinnipiac. It's also three other polls that came out that it's all within the margin of error.
Yeah.
It is, but she had a bad week. I mean, you have to take – she really – I mean, her numbers will get some fortification here quickly. But she had – the Benghazi report came out, the Comey testifying for hours about her lying. Whenever there is a terrorist attack or you know, safety concerns are top of mind, Trump does better. So I think we'll see those numbers move.
Your colleague, guys, John Cass, wrote as deliberate a column as I've seen him write in a long time about Hillary Clinton. And he simply said she's not qualified. It's the same line that we're using against Donald Trump. She is not qualified because of her lying, because of her deceptiveness. She's not qualified.
Well, coupled with the fact that she, you know, did something frankly illegal. With using a private server to move and discuss top secret information.
She's the most qualified. She is the most qualified person who's ever run for that office.
That's not true at all.
She's not guilty of a crime. The way you get guilty of a crime is somebody arrests you or you get indicted. There's charges. None of that's happened. She's not guilty of a crime.
I think he was making the distinction that she disqualified herself with the lying. Because I agree with you, John, that in terms of just basic qualifications, you're not going to get someone in that post who, you know, former Secretary of State, former U.S. Senator, lots of White House and policy experience. She's certainly qualified, but I think he was making the point that it's almost immoral to be rooting for her when you are rooting for someone who knowingly lied and put, you know, the national security of the country at risk. That's what he wrote.
Is that what you mean, Scott?
Yeah, well, yes. And the fact that, you know, not charged, that's a hell of a campaign slogan.
Well, okay. But
Not indicted.
Fair enough, but it almost doesn't matter. None of that matters this year, right? Were it anybody else
does.
On the other
side? I think that's why her polls are so terrible.
I don't see how somebody can look at that gray thing of her email server and say, therefore, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump.
No, I mean, but what people understand is when she said, you know, it was a YouTube video when that's clearly a lie. You know, I didn't move top secret. I didn't use my private server for top secret information. I didn't use it. It wasn't marked top secret. Well, I mean, people understand being lied to. And the great sin of her husband wasn't the affair. It was wagging his finger at all of us and saying, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Miss Lewinsky?
Yeah. You know, I just, for some reason, have never gotten so exercised about the obfuscation about Benghazi. I think that some of it is a little trumped up anyway. I think that in real time, those people were dealing with something a world away. And if they didn't communicate correctly or 100% honestly, I don't think that's the first time that's happened. I wish they had handled it better. I wish that it hadn't happened. But how is that one incident... How is that one incident reason to vote for Donald Trump? I mean,
it's big, John. Have you read the book or seen the movie 13 Hours for starts?
Yeah, both. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought that was a very straight take on what happened.
I do too.
They didn't even mention her. They didn't mention
Correct.
The White House. Clearly, they abandoned these people. They knew what was going on. They left them sitting on a roof. It was the Libyan army that came and rescued them. And then you have a string of lies. This occurred on a Tuesday, and on Sunday you have Susan Rice going on the talk shows after they have gathered all kinds of information about what actually happened, and you have Hillary Clinton telling the family members of the dead folks that it was a video. I mean, it's very distasteful. Now, is what I'm describing enough to pull her base away from her in voting for her? Absolutely not. Is it enough to maybe get those soft middle voters, those independent voters that both of them are trying to court? Is it enough to turn them off? Yeah, it is.
And I think the narrative it paints, both the FBI email investigation and Benghazi, paint her as frankly bumbling and rather incompetent. And they use those words. What was extremely careless was the FBI verbiage. And the Benghazi report shows that not just her, but the entire White House was incompetent and bumbling and handling that situation.
That was her friend in Benghazi. I think it has two parts. The first is what happened at the compounds. And then the second one is how did they handle the information afterwards. And I don't personally hold Hillary Clinton responsible for what happened at that compound. I really don't.
She was part of, but she's part and parcel of the group that was in charge of that operation. And so I think that that's what the American people, again, that's not a gray thing for the people, American people to see.
Didn't you feel that 13 hours, Kristen was pretty agnostic about her complicity, her being complicit in what happened at the compound itself?
Yes, it was. And I am making a delineation between what happened that night and what happened in the days afterward, and the cover-up and the lack of accountability. Just admit what we all know now to be true, that you should have fortified that embassy more. It was not protected. It's the cover-up. It's the lying. It was all about reelecting Obama, and he did not want this mark on his record on September 11th, a month and a half before the election, that somehow he allowed or was complicit in a terrorist act taking place. So they spun the machine. They got the machine spinning. They threw Susan Rice out there. They lied to the American people about what happened. That is extremely offensive.
Sort of like repressing a police shooting video to get reelected mayor of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. But let's finish this conversation that way, though. Were it anybody else that she was running against, then I think this conversation has some meat to it. But it doesn't matter. I mean, really. So does this make either of you want to vote for Donald Trump?
Oh, because God,
that's
no.
Well, but that's what this conversation is ultimately about.
I'm
Scott.
Voting for Gary Johnson, though. So
I don't think that's a wasted vote, although I think that is a vote for Hillary Clinton. But that's fine. But I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to decide if you're going to vote for Donald Trump as a result of this. And you're not, right?
No, he's a petulant child. Nothing could make me vote for him. Truly.
Are you all surprised that Mike Pence is going to be evidently his vice presidential candidate?
I want to ask Christian if she agrees, but my take on that is Pence is in an incredibly tight race in Indiana. He cannot run for governor and vice president at the same time, according to my understanding of the rules of Indiana. So he gets a step away from a race where he could probably lose and position himself to be a national candidate.
Yes, I don't think the race is as tight as some have suggested. I see that now he's getting, picked apart, that he's a chicken and he's, jumping out of his gubernatorial race. I think he would have been safely reelected, but he's someone who has always had White House aspirations. He brings some sense of credibility to the ticket for again, we know who our hard right and hard left voters are going to be. It's those voters in the middle that you're trying to attract. And if you're a moderate Republican who's been a little bit concerned about the temperament of Donald Trump, the lack of foreign policy experience, the lack of experience in Washington, Mike Pence kind of fills in those gaps.
Yeah. His resume, though, does include some of those head slappers from at least the left, about global warming and stuff like that. Why are you chuckling, Scott?
Because there's more. I mean, he, like we said earlier, he's not the Hoosier he should have chosen.
Who is?
Well, again, it was
Mitch Daniels would have been great, but he's not interested. We wanted him to run for the White House, and he's just too comfortable over there in Purdue.
What's also interesting about Pence is he ran a congressional race that got very nasty. He ran a very negative campaign, and he actually apologized for it afterwards and wrote a piece in the Indianapolis Star saying that we have to stop the name-calling. We have to bring civility back.
Confessions of a negative campaigner, and I thought, how stand-up is that?
Well, not just that, but look, I mean, man, is he running with the wrong guy then?
I wondered about that. So it's one of those things where maybe the end justifies the means. We'll have to run a hostile campaign because it's so important that Hillary not become president, and that's just the way you have to do business, I suppose.
This kind of reminds me of Congressman Miller, who was the running mate for Goldwater in 64. I mean, he kind of came out of nowhere, and I think assumed this would position him for national prominence and a run, or at least for a run for a Senate in his own state and so on, and you've never heard from him. He was on an American Express commercial. Do you remember the old ones? Do you remember me? I was a vice presidential candidate. Honest to God, he did one of those. But
I think there's nothing to lose, though. I mean, look at Sarah Palin. It shot her into national, international stardom.
Didn't hurt her in the long run.
Didn't hurt, John McCain. I'm sorry. Who am I forgetting?
Talking about presidential candidates, Mitt Romney or
vice presidential
candidates?
Speaker Ryan. Sorry, when he ran with Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
So I. It's not.
Oh, really? But I thought about this. I thought, well, if Mike Pence is married, and I know that he and his wife are probably just as ambitious as he is, they really want to be president or vice president someday, but when he comes home and says, hey, honey, guess what? I wonder what her reaction was. Did she say, like, oh, really? Because not only might you lose this, but this will stick with you forever. And it's not going to make you the darling of the right like maybe Sarah Palin became. The right is already against you. This, to me, is political suicide if you don't win. What a roll of the dice it is for the Pences.
Yeah, I mean, there was an argument that we made at the editorial board that it actually removes some of the credibility that Mike Pence has built over the years because
he said yes.
Look at all the people who said no. I mean, I think he was maybe number 77 on the list of people that the Trump campaign approached.
Well, look at this. So I was reading Time magazine, and Joel Stein, the very funny columnist,
I love him,
back couple pages, mentions WGN Radio's Ro Khan, who interviewed Mark Kirk and asked if he was going to go to the convention itself. Kirk said, no, I'm working on my hair that day. Mark Kirk said that. A funny. So the line of Republicans who are not going to go, Stein just, you know, lists all of their excuses. They're at a golf tournament. They're on a fact-finding mission to Ecuador. It's just, it goes on and on and on. My question to you guys is, though, does that matter? I mean, since this is such an atypical year, maybe those people abandoning ship really doesn't hurt the candidate's chances as much as it would if it were anybody else.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter one bit. That convention center in Cleveland is going to be packed wall to wall. It will not matter if Mark Kirk is there or not. And he's in a tight race. Everyone around the country who is in a tight reelection race is not going to the convention because that's 5 days that you are away from your district. You need every minute in your district.
Well,
when you
it's
are
not
in
just.
Race.
It's also 5 days with Trump signs behind you every day, mm-hmm. in which
yeah,
your opposition
right.
can run and say he supports Don Trump.
What did you think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comments this week, Scott?
Oh, I was infuriated. I think she obviously a strong and intellectual jurist, but seems to be kind of slipping a little bit. She's in her 80s now. And
83, I think.
And this is just something, it's unseemly and it's unheard of. It's not entirely unheard of in the history of the Supreme Court. We've had Supreme Court justices run for president. We had Charles Evans Hughes against Woodrow Wilson in, 16? Solomon P. Chase obviously was trying to get the Democratic nomination in 1872 when he was Chief Justice. I mean,
stop showing off.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, sorry, but it's just I'm a geek this way. I'm sort of like an idiot.
Yeah,
sometimes.
But none of that has happened lately. I mean,
no,
it really is a bridge of, and she admitted as much.
Yeah, she did. To her credit.
I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah,
I don't know if that erases it. And imagine if we have a Gore Bush.
I think it erases
court.
It.
Decision to be made.
I think if you apologize, you say, listen, I screwed up. Here's what I screwed up. You know, and there's no obfuscation. She said what I said was wrong. And
didn't say what I said was wrong.
Not what she
said that I said anything.
Was wrong. Right.
Yeah.
And that's really, and she's right there. I mean, you can have an opinion. You can agree or disagree with what she said. I happen to agree with it.
Well, I have a theory about this, but I want Kristen to talk for a second here. What are you thinking about all of this?
I agree with Scott. I mean, I think, you know, of course, we're all entitled to our own opinions. I don't expect the Supreme Court to be completely robotic and impartial, but you keep those views to yourself when you are a top jurist in the law of the land.
Well, even if we know what our views are. I mean, how do
right.
you think? So there's
right.
no great revelation here. It's not like she's.
But as a jurist, and when you're writing rulings and dissenting opinions, you are ruling on a policy matter. And so, yes, your political views come through on policy. But wading into a presidential campaign.
Why do you think she said it, Kristen?
I just think she just had a free moment. I think we all, with social media and everything else, there's a lot of unscripted moments now. And she just thought it would be humorous. I don't think she realized she was going to create a firestorm, and we wrote an editorial about it, mentioning that Antonin Scalia at one point went on a hunting trip with Dick Cheney.
You're right.
And that was viewed as also crossing that line. I mean, and also you're talking to, you're in a journalism community who is weighing in on this, where we're not allowed to put a bumper sticker on our car. I can't sign a petition for, you know, Save the Earth of all the people lining up on Michigan. I mean, we are trained to at least at all times try to avoid an appearance of a conflict of interest. So I just see what she said as crossing that line.
I think she's one of those people who feel like the train is coming and even though it's not their place, they're trying to push us out of the way. She knows she shouldn't do it, but if Trump becomes president, she will regret not having done everything humanly possible to keep that from happening. I think it's a measure of how dire some people see these things. Every day there's another person coming out, like George Will or somebody like that, who said, you know, I just got to say, we can't let this happen to this republic. And there's a member of the Supreme Court who will feel that more than most. And she's got to say something. And then she says and goes, ah, crap, I shouldn't have said that. But I think she was probably tortured about the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was my
own
view.
Right. Okay.
Real quick, guys, let's talk about the paychecks that members of the state legislature in Springfield are getting. Whoop, whoop, whoop. I was kind of glad, Scott, that it took them that long to get it. I thought they were getting paid regularly, but evidently they just got their April paycheck. They make $70,000+. They
base.
Get a $10,000 office expense account, and then what, Kristen, if they have certain titles, they get bonuses as well?
Mm-hmm. If you lead a committee, you get an extra between $10,000 and $12,000. If you're in leadership, you get between $10,000 and $17,000 a year. So in all, you can, most lawmakers are pretty close to like between $80,000 and I would say $110,000. Is how much they make annually for a part-time job.
Most of them have other jobs too, or a lot of them just doing this for a living?
I would say about a third are full-time legislators and two-thirds have a job outside of the General Assembly.
Boy, imagine having to wait until, you know, the middle of July to get your April paycheck.
It's real. There was a senator who, Kimberly Lightford from Maywood, who stood up on the Senate floor and was complaining about not getting paid because they are employees of the state. They're not vendors. They deserve to be paid. And oh boy, does that make my blood boil. Because do you know how many people, small business owners, vendors, have been waiting 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months to get paid for years? You know how many school districts are waiting for millions and millions of dollars from the state so they can figure out if they can open their doors in the fall? And you're going to sit there and complain about not getting paid? Ugh! I almost fell out of my chair just now.
She did.
Boy, there's a cartoon for you to draw, huh, Scott?
There's always a cartoon to draw here.
Yeah, no kidding.
Always.
Well, and was that just like the checks in the mail and it finally came through, or did that require some sort of special act that actually enabled them to get paid?
The comptroller, who is basically the day-to-day accountant for the state, took lawmaker paychecks and just put lawmakers at the end of the line. She wasn't cutting their pay or reducing their pay, but she just put them at the back of the line. And so they had to wait, just like everybody else who works for the state or does business with the state. And so the checks rolled in more slowly. But I will also add this. Down in Springfield, there's a credit union that would front the money. Lawmakers, of course, you know, they don't have to follow the rules that others do. They got a line of credit, and so they could apply to get their paychecks ahead of time.
Do they pay interest on that? I wonder if they, you know, essentially that's a loan against future earnings. I want them to go to one of those payday loan places where the rate's like 900%.
Yes. Oh, that'd be nice.
Well, here's the law that we need to write, Kristen.
Cash in the title for your office.
What we need to do is pass a law. They need to pass the law that they don't get paid until they pass a budget. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, then we'd see how motivated they were. What do you think of that?
Well, Pat Quinn actually tried to block lawmaker pay because they adjourned without doing anything on pension reform in 2014. The lawmakers went to court, fought it. Now their pay is in statute. So now it would be almost impossible to do that. And they wanted interest on the months that
nice.
They didn't get paid under Pat Quinn.
Kind of the reverse of what I had in mind, huh?
Yes.
Okay, let's close this podcast with our weekly recommendations. So, Scott, here's what we do. We go around the table and we say, here's something I'm reading, watching, or listening to, or drinking, and I want you to...
That's my contribution,
that's
Scott.
Does
that shock you?
We were so highbrow, and then she came up with, I believe it was a margarita mix or something like that one time. So, Kristen, do you want to go first, or shall I?
You go first.
All right, here's my recommendation, Pokemon Go. I think you should at least give it a try because, maybe better this, because I have and it's not for me. That's fine. But I think it is it doesn't hurt to be tapped into what the kids are doing. And when I first downloaded this, I then sat there and thought, okay, I'll play. And then it dawned on me, no, I have to walk down the street and go to this one hotel lobby and then go in and throw the ball at the lion on the sofa. That was this statue. And I thought, wow, this requires exercise, going out, maybe talking to somebody. All of those things that we say video games are the opposite of, this is actually encouraging. So I'm on the Pokemon Go bus, even if it's not a bus for me.
I can't believe you're doing it, John.
I can't either.
Oh, we were in the Showcase studio. I was on Patty Vasquez's show last night, and she has a squeaky or whatever the heck it is in her lap in the studio. So we had dozens of kids right on her lap.
So people are coming up and
groping her
and taking what looks like probably photographing her. Huh?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. Well, what an honor to be one of the objects of the game. Good for her. I guess it's the Showcase studio is the location of one of them. Huh?
Yes, and there's about two others around the tower.
What do you like, Scott? What are you going to recommend for our listeners?
I am reading a book, George Washington Alive. I didn't know, I like most Americans, have a cursory understanding of the life of George Washington. So when I get tied into something, I pick four or five biographies and kind of dive into the subject. This is by Willard Stern Randall. It's George Washington Alive. He's a former journalist, so he's a really good writer. And it's just, so far, it has been delightful. That's what's on the nightstand right now, and I'm just enjoying the heck out of it. It's very, very good.
You know, I've got Bully Pulpit by Doris Kearns Goodwin on there right now.
How is that?
I've got another Teddy Roosevelt show coming up. You know, I'm always fact-driven. I want to know stuff. And it dawned on me as I was reading this that every page doesn't have to be filled with a factoid, John. Just go for the journey. Just sort of live with these people. I have a real nice feeling that I'm 100 and some years ago, and I'm going through the parks, and I'm following this life, and it flows very nicely. Time for you to sign up here, Kristen. What's your recommendation?
So I have two. One, I had the distinct pleasure of having a little spot of whiskey with the longtime librarian for the Tribune, who is now retired. She came back to clear out her desk. She works in the morgue, and she is surrounded by old clips and just mountains and mountains of old Tribune paperwork. And we sat in the back and we had a little spot of Middleton Irish whiskey. It is phenomenal. Huh. You must try it. I mean,
Middleton Irish whiskey.
I think it's about $175 a bottle. and I'm not kidding. It was really delicious.
Wow.
But also, I just really quickly, the best article that I've read on ISIS, I've probably recommended this before. It was in The Atlantic last May, and it's called What ISIS Really Wants. And when these attacks keep unfolding, I will pull it out and kind of reread it because it's just a very good description of how they operate and how we are so ill-equipped to deal with them.
Hmm. Give me the month then of The Atlantic again. Do you remember?
It's in The Atlantic, 2015, March. What ISIS Really Wants. You can Google it.
What ISIS Really Wants. That's Kristen McQuarrie. You can read her editorials in the Chicago Tribune and catch her columns there sometimes, too. Scott Standis, thanks for joining us, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks to our producer, that's Kristen Decker. And Bob Ferguson has been our engineer here on The Mincing Rascals. And thanks again to Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand for their contributions their way. But we'll catch up with them again soon, and we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.